Step number four, to building, leading, and protecting your business. Protecting your business.
It is important to build your business as an asset, not a hobby. So as you're thinking about your business as an asset, one of the most critical things that you can think about is how do you protect this asset? And although this is the fourth step in the program, it is clearly not the fourth in priority. Protecting your business is very important. The protection of your business is done through proper entity structuring. Now, what do we mean by protection specifically? We mean protecting your assets, protecting yourself from unnecessary liabilities, the use of privacy as a protection, and protecting yourself from unnecessary tax burdens. So let's talk a little bit about this. Many people, when we work with them, are just starting their business. They'll ask, well, why do I need to set up an entity and how early? When do I even set up the structure? What we would say is that if you're clearly setting out to build a business as an asset, you have a vision, you have strategies, you've worked on revenue, you set it up from the beginning. Absolutely put your business inside of an entity. See, what we know is that there's two tax systems, one for people who are employed and one for those who own a business. So unless you're set up with the proper entity structuring, and we mean entity, and I'm going to talk about those, what I mean by entity is a corporation, a limited partnership, a limited liability company. So what we say to someone who's brand new and just starting, because the question always begs itself, which is, when do I set up an entity or corporation, and how large does my company need to be? And our answer to that is, it depends. It depends on what the intention of your company is. Given the fact that you want your vision to become real and the strategies that drive the revenue modeling are what you are absolutely committed to do, we would say set up the proper entity from the beginning and take the appropriate tax strategy benefits from the first moment of inception of the business. Now, if you've already started a business and you're asking the question, when do I set up an entity? Again, we're going to ask you what your intention is. Your intention will drive what sort of entity is appropriate for the business that you have, and your intention will drive the appropriate timing to set up the corporation. So for example, if you're running a business and your intention is to have the business become an asset, proper entity structuring will do a couple things. It's going to protect your business solely. So for example, if you don't have your business set up in an entity, and you have some friends over to your house for a Christmas party or some sort of a holiday party, and someone trips in your house and wants to sue you, your business is now at risk. Now, conversely, it protects your assets. So if someone is in your business and trips and falls and wants to sue your business, if it's in the proper entity structure, then they can't go after the rest of your assets, i.e. your home, other intellectual property, other real estate you might own. So the idea of proper entity structuring, it segments your wealth base and puts protection. It puts a little shell around each of the assets you own, and it minimizes any of your risk from any lawsuits to come in and get anything besides the asset that's in that current entity. The goal of proper asset protection is to minimize risk, grow and sustain your asset base. So let's talk about the various entities that are available to you, and then we'll talk more about when and if you should incorporate. Let's start with the C corporation. A C corporation is a separate legal entity from the stockholders who own it. It has a life of its own. It can own an asset. It can incur liabilities. It provides goods and services to the general public. Every C corporation starts as a C corporation. And many people say, well, what's a C corporation? It's just a letter indication that was given by the Internal Revenue Service. And a C corporation remains as such unless it's made into a subchapter S election. C corporations are often the first step in reducing taxes and protecting assets. They can additionally provide tax-deductible expenses. Currently, C corporations offer approximately 300 deductible expenses of which you can take advantage. If you want to take your company public, you will need a C corporation structure to do that. The C corporation additionally offers the benefit of having a fiscal year end of either March 31st, June 30th, September 30th, or December 31st. So you say, well, what's the benefit of that? Later in this section, I'll describe what we call multiple corporate strategies, where multiple corporations can be owned by shareholders, and the goal is to reduce the tax burden by using various fiscal year ends. So that's why there's different dates for the corporate year end. The second entity I'll talk about is an S corporation. As I just mentioned, the S corporation starts out as a C corporation. It is then converted by a simple filing of a Form 2553. By making this election, you're choosing to have your corporation's income treated like income of a partnership or a sole proprietorship. The income is passed through to the shareholders of the corporation. S corporations have approximately 75 allowable expense deductions. They can be used as part of a multi-corporate strategy and for newer businesses. S corporations can flow a loss through to the individual, which reduces their personal income, while losses to the C corporation do not pass through to the individual. The next entity that I'll be discussing is a limited partnership. A limited partnership has two aspects to its structure: one or more general partners and one or more limited partners. Generally speaking, limited partners share in the profits of the partnership but are shielded from its liabilities. They have no say in the management of the partnership activities. In most limited partnerships, the limited partners are passive investors. The general partner has the benefits and responsibilities of actively managing the limited partnership's activities. In exchange for this, the general partner also has unlimited financial and legal responsibility for the losses or liabilities of the limited partnership. A great way to protect the general partner against this unlimited liability is by making the general partner a corporation. Limited partnerships are often used to hold real estate and other investments, where the parties involved don't wish to be on equal footing. In other words, they work well when one investor wants to remain passive and they desire to have someone else manage the partnership's activities. The next entity we'll be discussing is a family limited partnership. Simply put, family limited partnerships are limited partnerships where the large majority of participants are family members. They follow the same basic rules and enjoy the same benefits of a regular limited partnership. They are powerful for asset protection purposes, and they are a great estate planning tool. We'll also be discussing a limited liability company, known as an LLC. Limited liability companies are a newer type of entity, but they have now been around long enough to be time-tested. It is a separate entity for asset protection purposes. If sued, only the assets of the LLC are at risk. The participants in an LLC are called a member, unlike the limited partnership, of which is designed for the participants to be treated differently. An LLC's members are all on equal footing. This gives all members an opportunity to actively participate in the LLC's activities. Traditionally, this has been a great vehicle in which to hold real estate and other investments. Last and most important, I want to talk about trusts. Trusts are powerful in two ways. First, they take the property outside the reach of creditors. Secondly, they take the property outside the reach of beneficiaries with insatiable financial appetites. So if you want to give a loved one a gift, and especially the benefit of the income that it generates, but you're unsure of the ability to properly manage it, a trust may be the solution. I just briefly described the core entities that are used in the protection of your business and the protection of assets. So the question that many of you have right now is, when do I start one of these entities? The answer to that question lies again in your vision and your intent of the business. If your intent is to continue to grow this business as an asset, you start the entity from the beginning. If you're several years into a business and it is producing a profit and your intention is to continue with that revenue stream and with that business, it is strongly suggested that you do set up the proper entity structure. So then the question is, well, which one do I do? And again, that would depend on which kind of business you're doing, how profitable the business is, and how many stockholders you have. So what we do is we offer this service inside the company of Live Out Loud. And what we do, and I'll offer those that are listening, is we give you a free 30-minute session to just talk one-on-one about your business so we can make sure that an attorney has reviewed exactly what you need to do of which entity would be the best suited for you, for your business, and your business goals. A couple things to know for those that do have corporations. Many people come to us, they'll have had corporations set up, and they're not maintaining them. So let me briefly go over a couple things that is important to maintain the corporate structure. Once you've decided on which corporation to set up, you'll have what's called articles of incorporation. Those articles of incorporation, along with an EIN number, it's an employee identification number, are what's required to open the business bank account for this entity. So for example, if you had a sole proprietorship that you've been running for years and years, you would actually need to close that bank account because it's under your Social Security number and reopen a new account with the articles of incorporation and the EIN number for this new corporate business. Once you have the new set of books open, there's a couple state filings that will need to happen. But every year you're required to do an annual filing of who the officers of the corporation are. You're also required to do annual corporate minutes. And corporate minutes are things that document any high-level decisions that were made by the officers and stockholders of the company. For example, if you wanted to put in a new medical policy for the officers of the company. And you may say, well, I'm a sole person. So you'll be the officer, the president, the vice president, the secretary, and the treasurer for the corporation. So you will make a decision, in this case, to enact a new medical policy. That would need to be written up, for example, and put into corporate minutes. If you wanted to buy a new vehicle for the company, that's something that would be documented as an agreement by the officers. Annually, you're required to have a board meeting for the corporation. If you wanted to take that trip in Hawaii, you could take that trip in Hawaii and it would need to be documented into the corporate minutes. What I've noticed about a lot of wealthy people who really use businesses efficiently as an asset is that their board meetings are in Aruba. Their board meetings are in Thailand. Their board meetings are in Australia. Their board meetings are places that a typical person would call a vacation spot. These are regularly documented minutes that go inside of your corporate kit and your corporate profile. And again, we have complete services to help support you to make sure that you do what's called the protection of the corporate veil. When you call for your free incorporation strategy session, we'll make the determination with you. Which entity, when to set it up, which state to set it up with. Your individual business, your individual vision, which state you're in, the laws of your state, all are as custom as your fingerprint. So it's really important that you set the foundation for your business accurately and appropriately. Once your first company is up and running and profitable, typically we look at around a $50,000 net revenue mark, you'll want to open a second corporation. Typically, if your first corporation was an S corporation or a limited liability company, we would have a C corporation be a secondary company to help support the management, the marketing, and the growth of this business you're building. A secondary benefit of this multiple corporate strategy are the tax benefits that you're going to be able to take advantage of. So let's talk a little bit about the tax strategies. There are two tax systems in the United States. One tax structure for employees and the other tax structure is for businesses. See, employees get taxed on what they earn and that money's taken right out of their paycheck before they even get their check to spend what's left. You don't have a choice in saving any additional money or spending it in any additional way. Whereas a corporate business structure, it allows you to earn money first and then incur appropriate business expenses of which you're taxed on what's left. So the vision, the intent, and the strategies that you've clarified up to this point in your business, it helps a tax strategist determine which entity is best for you, and depending on which entity you choose, will determine which tax benefits and which tax strategies you can enact. It's our observation that most new business owners are paying expenses as personal deductions and not taking advantage of the full business deduction opportunities they have. I've listed in the guidebook typical business deductions that you could take advantage of to minimize your tax burden. For example, if you have a home office, that could then become part of office rent, the utilities and phone and the percent associated with that. Meals can be deducted. Gas, mileage, office supplies. You could hire family members to work in the business. Your travel then becomes documented business expenses. Any accounting, bookkeeping, other staff and service fees, gifts, promotional items, legal fees, education, research and development. So here's where we get to the accounting system, which is very different. Again, I want to point out then the revenue modeling. Revenue modeling is to forecast and project that you're going to have the revenues being generated to sustain the business. This piece around tax is where your accounting system becomes critical. And in fact, when we talked about teams, on your team, you'll have two very important people. One, which will work in your business, which is your bookkeeper, and the other, which would work on your business, which is a CPA and or tax strategist. Let's talk a little about these two people. Both need your leadership. Most bookkeepers know how to run a software program. They know how to run QuickBooks. They know how to run Quicken, MS Money. There's all sorts of types of systems. What they don't know how to run is your business. So it's really important in the beginning when you're setting up an accounting system, which is what's called a chart of accounts, which goes back to the P&L and balance sheet. You're going to set up all the income and all the expense, all the assets, all the liabilities. Your bookkeeper needs to know the strategies and the tactics such that they can set up appropriate bookkeeping for you. One of the things that a mentor once told me is that you don't ever give ownership to what you can hire, and don't learn activities that will take you away from revenue-producing activities if necessary. So if you're the owner and you are the primary salesperson and your job is the primary revenue producer, you learning to lead your books and understand your books is absolutely critical. But to actually do all the data entry of receipts is something that you need to hire. So let's talk about how to set up this accounting structure for your books so that you can really take full advantage of the tax strategies available to your business. If you go back to the P&L, profit and loss statement and balance sheet that you did in the earlier section of revenue modeling, what I want you to do is compare this to your personal account. What we see with a lot of new business owners is that they're still writing a lot of expenses out of their personal account. In our opinion, and a lot of CPAs who really know tax strategies well, is the only personal deductions that should be taken out of your own personal account now, because so many of these can become business deductions, is your personal mortgage, your personal groceries, your personal clothes, child supplies, basic supplies for your house. Almost, I'll qualify that, almost all other expenses can be put into a business deduction category for your corporation. And again, you're going to want to consult your CPA and tax strategist to ensure that you're getting the maximum deductions available for the corporation and the business structure that you're set up. The protection of unnecessary tax burdens is clearly a strategic reason for you to build your wealth and keep your wealth for generations. So in your guidebook, I've provided some space. What I'd like you to do is think about the deductions that you've not been taking full advantage of and that you will start taking advantage of from here forward. For example, have there been travel expenses that may have been overlooked? Have there been educational books or tapes or programs that you've gone to where you wrote it out of your personal checking account or you used a personal credit card to make those purchases? I want you to make a list and really think about the business deductions that you need to take advantage of from this point forward. One great exercise I give a lot of my coaching clients is to go back through their personal checkbook. That alone will tell you where you're spending out of your personal category and need to be transferring those over to your business account. Spend some time in your guidebook writing that down. So let me talk to you new business owners for just a moment. You're straddlers. Remember the straddling is you got one foot in a job and one foot in this business, and this business has cost a little bit of money to get set up. You're really not profitable yet. So what do? I still want you to set up a separate business account. Even if you're still in a sole proprietorship, I want a separate set of books. Hopefully what you've gleaned from the last piece of information I've been giving you is that the necessity to separate your personal life from your business life is critical. To be able to fully take advantage of these tax strategies, they need to be separate. So even if you're just a new beginning business and you're starting to maximize these tax strategies and take out the deductions from your business account, I can already hear many of you saying, my business isn't making any money, so how do I do it? You're going to loan yourself the money to do it. Because if you continue to write those business deductions out of your personal account with your W-2 money, I know habitually about 99% of my clients who don't open up a separate set of books and start really running this business as a business will end up never getting their business off the ground. So habitually, I want you to start on a regular month-to-month basis running this business as a business, even if it's not in profit yet. Think about large companies who are going public and they've not been funded by their venture capitalists yet. How do you think they run? They don't run out of their personal bank accounts. And what I also know is that wealth won't come to confusion. So to maintain the maximum tax strategies and maintain the appropriate protection for your business, the key is proper documentation. The documentation of your articles of incorporation, documentation of your corporate minutes, documentation of your sets of books, making sure that your bookkeeper is coding your books exactly how you want them to be coded. Your bookkeeper should be working very closely with your CPA. So even the smallest business needs you to lead this team. And even if the team consists just of you and your bookkeeper and your CPA, it's a great place for you to start learning and getting the leadership skills required to grow a bigger and more profitable business. Let's talk about a couple more places for documentation. Documentation of your accounting records. Specifically, when you want to take a tax deduction, you need five things. So every receipt, you need five specific items listed on the receipt. You'll need a cost of the item. You need the date of purchase. You need the description of the nature of the purchase. You need the business purpose for the purchase. And you list the business relationship of the purchase. For example, if you're going out to dinner with a client and it's a new customer, that's the relationship. If you're going out to dinner with some vendors, you'd list the vendor and their name. So based on the information you've learned in this lesson, I want you to think about and write down some action steps you're going to take to start protecting your business. We want you to run your business as an asset. We expect you run your business as an asset, and that business is solely protected outside of the liability of your home. We want you to have your home and your family and your estate protected from any liabilities of your business. So take the appropriate steps and set it up so that your estate and your wealth plan is protected for generations. We'll see you in the next session.
Step number five, to building, leading, and protecting your business. Marketing.
People don't want to be marketed to, they want to be communicated with. So let's talk about marketing. What we know is marketing is critical in order for you to take your product or service to the public. So many businesses random market. They try this thing 1 month, then they try something else the next month. It's no wonder they're never on target, and no wonder they're never in revenue. They don't have a clear vision of their company by which a marketing plan can be designed. They don't know where they want to go. They're just wandering around. So random marketing occurs from wandering. With the work you've already done on your vision, your marketing can be like a laser beam that hits your revenue projections every single month. From the words of Jay Levinson and Seth Godin, the secret of a marketing plan is that it will enable you to see your ultimate goal with clarity, making minor setbacks and failures along the way unimportant. Just as important, a plan helps you communicate your vision to your employees, ad agencies, and investors. In your guidebook, we've provided some space for you to start listing your current marketing plan. The first step when we work with any client is to list your current efforts. See, what we know is as an owner, you are out busy marketing. But if it's not targeted, if you don't have a focus, who's your niche, who's the target, what's your intention of that effort, what we see over and over and over is what I called earlier random marketing. Now what I'd like you to do is make a list of all the marketing activities that you currently do. And next to that, do a quick assessment. How well is it working? Are you making money from it? Marketing efforts can be measured and tracked, and what we see about a lot of clients is that part of the plan doesn't include the tracking. So as we move into this lesson on marketing, I want to show you some very distinctive ways to track your marketing efforts so you really can put into the forecast what it's going to take to market your product and service to take it to the public. Spend some time in your guidebook writing that down. Once you've completed the list of the marketing activity, I want you to think about the lessons and the exercises that you've done earlier. Getting clear about your vision, identifying strategies, tactics, systems, think about the revenue modeling, the protection of your business. What marketing plan will assist you to achieve the results you want? I want you to identify your target market, also known as a niche market. And why would they want to purchase your product? So in the guidebook, spend a moment and list who is your target market specifically. What's the age demographics? What's the socioeconomic demographics? Is it male? Is it female? What part of the United States? Is it a global market? Really spend some time and get clear about your target market. To follow that, I want you to answer the question, why do they purchase your product over another product? Spend some time in your guidebook writing that down. Once you've identified your target market and the reasons why you believe they're going to purchase your product over another, now we need to work on your elevator speech, also known as your unique selling proposition. If you were at a networking session and you were given 2 minutes on stage to say who you are and what do you do, what would you say? Spend some time in your guidebook writing that down. Realize that what you have just written, in essence, is a customer's first impression of you. I've identified some assessment questions so that you can really analyze what you've written and rewrite a more effective elevator speech and marketing statement. Think about, was the statement clear? Was it concise? Did it tell the customer exactly what you do? Or was the focus more on you than the business? Did your statement direct your customer to action? Or was there a call to action, requesting them to do something from your introduction? What emotions were you stirring up in the customer as they were listening to you? Did you draw them forward to want to listen to what you say, or did they talk to their neighbor? For example, when I introduce myself at networking sessions, I say I'm the woman who creates more women millionaires than any other entity. What that causes is an immediate reaction of the audience to say, well, I want to know more about how I can become a millionaire. Spend some time in your guidebook and rewrite a more effective elevator speech and marketing statement. Now you have your elevator speech. It's powerful, it's directive, it calls your customers to action. You have a marketing statement for your business. It's now time to put that marketing plan together. In the guidebook, I've listed multiple ways to market. I want you to take a look at the different options, add many of your own if you so choose, and start coming up with a marketing plan that is effective, that does drive your vision, drives your strategies, and ultimately will produce revenue. When you think about marketing, I want you to think of it as what we call a marketing funnel. I want you to think about all the ways that if you are going to start putting people into your funnel. So when I say putting people into your funnel, what I mean is when you're out networking, what are you doing with those people? What's the intention of a networking meeting? What I notice about a lot of people is they'll go out and network and meet people, but no revenue ever occurs from that contact. In fact, a program that I've told a lot of my clients I'm going to design is called Contacts to Contracts to Cash. is because most people do know how to market at some level, but what they don't know how to do is capitalize on the efforts. So again, if you think about the funnel metaphor, I want you to start envisioning that you have at least 16 ways. And in your plan, I want to see 16 ways of which people can get into your funnel. And ultimately, at the bottom of the funnel is a sale, which means of these 16 avenues that are going to start filling up this funnel of marketing for you, you need to be very intentional about what the outcomes are. For example, if a networking meeting is to go meet one or two people to get a sale, I need you to meet the whole room. I need you to get the whole database of people in that room. If you're going to put a website up, is it just a brochure that people can casually stumble upon? Or are you going to put search engines? Are you going to put opt-in newsletters? Are you going to put ad campaigns? Are you going to put calls to action which drive a free report? What's the intention of the website such that at the bottom of the funnel, they're going to find you for a sale versus just have browsed your website as a casual brochure? If you do a direct mail piece, what's the intention of the mail piece? How is the mail piece going to attract a new customer? And when they do come into your funnel, is it an 800 number that they answer? Is it a website that you direct them to? How do they get to the sale? If you're going to do radio, I see a lot of people doing radio. I think it's an incredible marketing avenue. The challenge that I see is there's no call to action. What do you want all your listeners to do? And how do they access you to get into your funnel to get to a sale? So I want you to spend some time really putting together a marketing plan with projections that match the revenue forecast. So as you look at the list, there's telemarketing, there's radio advertising, email campaigns, videos, newsletters, affiliate programs, yellow pages, repeat customer programs, all of these marketing activities drive people into your funnel and ultimately to a sale. One specific thing to consider that is crucial to any of these efforts that you put in place is your database management system. So whether you have ACT or Goldmine or Outlook or a custom program on Access, whatever the program is that you have, it is absolutely crucial to manage your leads. So part of the marketing is to generate leads. The next piece, though, is how do you track those leads? And then how do you direct those leads from the top of your funnel all the way down to the bottom of your funnel into a sale? So take a moment and do a quick assessment of just your database management system. How are your leads being generated? How are they being tracked? And how are they being communicated with and managed? Take a moment and just jot a few notes down in the guidebook about how that currently is happening and what you want it to be like. As you begin your planning process, I want you to work at a very high level, not get caught into the how-tos. I'm not sure how I'll do this or how I'll afford it. I want you to think about what's most effective. I want you to think about your ideal funnel, at least 16 ways that you're going to bring new leads into the funnel and direct them through a very specific process to a sale. Some tips for successful marketing implementation. Always test your market first. What I mean by test your market is instead of sending a mailing or an email campaign or a newsletter to your entire database, send it to a select group and get some feedback. Another marketing tip is evaluate and track whether it's effective. So I'd mentioned that earlier. Your evaluation and tracking of your marketing efforts is crucial to you being able to fund the appropriate avenues for marketing. So some ways to evaluate or track whether your marketing efforts are being successful is to put what we call tracking systems in place. For example, on a direct marketing piece, you could send out to say 10,000 people. You want to track A, the number of respondents that got rejected and came back. You want to track how many people responded to the piece. And then you ultimately want to track how many sales resulted from that initial mail piece. Same with an email campaign. If you're sending an email out how many responses did you get? And of those responses, how long did it take to work them through the funnel such that you got a sale? Let's take the example of radio. Was there cost in getting onto the show first? And then tracking the funnel, how many leads came in from the radio show? With technology, there are so many ways to track these 16 marketing avenues. And I'm picking 16 as a magic number. I always challenge my clients to have at least that. You can have 14, you can have 20. My point is that you want to track the way they come in. If you have them come in electronically through lead generation systems, you'll be able to see which campaigns are being most effective. And again, back to evaluation and tracking, you want the amount of responses you get and the amount of sales that you get. So the next tip that I want to share with you is proper planning. And what I mean by that specific to marketing is that the timing and the positioning of the marketing piece is appropriate. So for example, if you want to run a Christmas special, you need to have it in your planning process, probably in around August, September, so it's actually making its run in October, November. What I see, again, about the random marketers is all of a sudden at the last minute in November, they'll be throwing a piece together and throwing it into the marketplace without a lot of planning to it. So proper planning is something that we're going to have you do in just a moment, where from January through December, you're going to be structuring when mail pieces would go out, when email campaigns would go out, when would brochures go out, when would talk shows happen, when would newspaper ads go out, when would you do the Yellow Pages ad, when would affiliate programs. So I want you to structure your 16 avenues to put people into your funnel for marketing into a complete year projection. Another tip is your budget. And really the question you need to ask yourself is how much are you willing to spend to acquire a new customer? Unfortunately, what I see more than not is people don't want to spend a dime to acquire a new customer. And for those of us who have been in the game and really built a business, what we know is the cost to acquire a new customer is actually less than what it takes to maintain current customers. So depending on the way that you market, you want to blend campaigns. One is to your current customer base and getting them to repurchase for you. And number two is the acquisition of new customers. So it's a blended campaign as you go into your year projections. Another tip is know what your competition is doing. I know that's simply said, and so few people do it. Really find out what's working for your competition. What's working for the people who are doing the same business you're doing? Get to know what they're doing. In fact, I really don't believe in competition. I believe the universe is abundant. The tip is just know what your competition's doing. The next tip for successful marketing is to create a customer response program, i.e., you want feedback from your customers and you want it in multiple ways. What do they think of your current service? What's their desire for more service? Do you know where the gap is in the current level of products or services that you're providing such that you could put something else into your delivery and offer them more service, more product, and essentially return more revenue back to you and the company? The last tip that I want to give you, and I had mentioned it earlier, is your need for a sophisticated database management process. When you're starting to drive an enormous amount of customers into your marketing plan, how they be managed, how they're tracked, how they're resold, how they're communicated to are all very important decisions that you as the owner need to be absolutely directly involved in. In fact, you could almost say that this piece and how you market will absolutely be branding your company. So what is the experience that you want your customers to have during this process? Spend some time in your guidebook writing that down. It's time now to do your marketing plan. So I want you to think back to the exercise I gave you earlier where you listed current marketing activities. If some of those are successful, I want you to project them in creating a plan for the next 12 months. I also want you to use the list that I've generated or other ideas that you have in creating a complete plan. So as you're creating the plan, I want you to do two things. The first thing is I want you to list into your plan the exact implementation date. So let's say you wanted to run a St. Patrick's Day special. In January, you would want to start preparing and planning for that. So in your plan, I want you to write initial planning times of when you're going to launch the plan and when the delivery of the marketing campaign will be done. So for every one initiative, you have a planning start date and a delivery date. That will help your planning and your projections as you move forward in your marketing efforts. In your guidebook, I've given you a 12-month calendar where you can project your planning and delivery of your marketing campaigns. Again, I would put this into a corporate calendar, whether that's something you use manually on a wall, if that's something you put into your shared calendar inside your office, so everyone that needs to know about this marketing plan has been communicated to. This is an area where communication can never be overlooked. What this plan does, it provides you with a raw visual for your next year's planning. Remember, every marketing activity is supported by tactics, and that takes planning in itself. Depending on the marketing efforts and the tactics that support that activity, you will need to plan and project cash management accordingly. Just as we suggested with the daily tactics that support your strategies, the marketing plan needs to be projected onto your business calendar as well, so that everyone who is supporting you and the vision is able to see where they fit into the picture and what will drive day-to-day business activity, ultimately what will drive revenue. Your role as leader, as owner of the company, is critical to making sure that these kind of big marketing endeavors stay on track, that they're successful, and that they are constantly supported by those who you have working with you. Your main task is that the marketing strategy stays in line with the vision and drives revenue projections. Given the significance of this task, I've given you a planning process inside your guidebook. What this includes is a list for all the marketing tasks that need to be done, who they need to be delegated to, and the completion date. So this, again, is something that everyone working on your team could be aware of and help hold each other accountable for, to make sure that the marketing efforts go off and sales get made. So you'll be well on your way to successful marketing of your business once you have your annual projections and the delegation list for all those involved in helping drive the revenue for your business. We'll see you in the next session.